College football nerds here talking Alabama and Cincinnati. We took a little bit of a December hiatus. I've been sick actually since the last time you saw me. Still a little bit sick since Thanksgiving. But I got Josh here with me. We are ready to rock and roll with some previews this week and maybe next. Going to talk this first round of the playoffs, Alabama and Cincinnati. Josh, just going to give them a little homework and we're going to get started. In the comments, you got one piece of homework this time. Give us a score prediction for this game. Let us know what you think it's going to look like. And Alabama fans, don't get crazy disrespecting Cincinnati because they're a G5 team. They earned their spot here, and we're going to talk about why. All right, Josh, I think usually we kind of talk about matchups here or there. We get into the model, and then we talk about the model and that. I want to start with at least just the score of the model. Maybe give a little initial thought on it just to get us rolling. And then we'll get into the advanced box score later down the line. But let's just go with the score as a little bit of a taste.
The model here is interesting because it has Alabama 33, Cincinnati 33. Now, if you want to get to the decimal points, I think Alabama's favored by 0.2 of a point here, but really across the board, extremely even. 5.53 yards per play predicted for Alabama, 5.57 yards per play predicted for Cincinnati, 33 all, and then our other generated numbers, percentage of opponent averages allowed. Alabama holding teams to 62% of their rushing averages, only 90% of their passing averages. That's not a great number. It's extremely average. Cincinnati doing a little better, 83% of opponent rushing averages, but 79% of opponent passing averages. So, I mean, that's how you get this score. You get a Cincinnati team that can stop the pass. You get an Alabama team decent against the run. And based off competition and the way our model looks at things, how you did against teams, how they did against everyone else. And it has this dead even, 33 all.
And there's two ways this is going to go, Josh. And people who follow this channel long enough know that conference isolation really makes it challenging to model when there's not a lot of cross-connective data points. It was a big problem with the Big 12 this year, and it's definitely a problem here. This isn't just a different conference. This is an entirely different level of competition. And Cincinnati fans will tell you that too. Like, they know they didn't play a full P5 schedule. That doesn't mean that they're not good enough to be here. And everybody that says Cincinnati doesn't belong, I'll remind them that 2018 Clemson didn't play nobody, Paul, and they handled their business in the playoffs. So from that standpoint, we can put that to bed. I will say though, another thing in Cincinnati's kind of maybe favor for those that weren't watching us back then. In 2017, our model had Central Florida, UCF, barely beating Auburn. And what we said at the time was the model is struggling to really adjust and combine the data and put these two teams within context of one another relative to who they play. And so we took that into consideration and both picked Auburn. So from that standpoint, I don't think the model is necessarily crazy. It's only doing what it can with the information that it can work with, with the information it has. What are your kind of initial takeaways with maybe model versus Vegas?
I guess my most interesting takeaway here is I kind of thought maybe Alabama would be a little further ahead. It feels like Alabama had been more dominant this year. Our model doesn't do a great job of differentiating across conferences. Frankly, no model does. The only way your model is going to be able to compensate for it, given how isolated conferences are these days, is if you actually weight recruiting rankings or past results or something like that. And it's usually recruiting rankings that are used to differentiate between conferences. If you do just a straight, pure on-the-field performance model, which is what ours is, I mean, it can only look at what's in front of it, and it doesn't have any great way to know how, for example, Tennessee lines up versus Tulane, and so you end up with these kinds of results all the time. I just felt like coming out of the year, and I think it's a lot of recency bias with the Georgia game. Man, Alabama was impressive in that game against Georgia. But I think the reality is Alabama had their struggles throughout the season off and on. Cincinnati did as well. The problem is, you know, if Alabama's struggling against an LSU team that, even with all their opt-outs and everything else, is still clearly a top 10 talent roster, how do you compare that to, I don't know, you know, like Tulane and Tulsa and games like that? I mean, if you have a struggle against that caliber team, how does that compare against Arkansas? You know, and so I think everyone's gut reaction when you look at the score is going to be, well, yeah, but. And my reaction is, well, yeah, but. And I think Vegas having this game by 2 touchdowns says that as well. But I do think it speaks to how good Cincinnati has been. It speaks to how dominant Cincinnati has been relative to their level of competition. And anyone that's just trying to poo-poo them and say, well, it's a bad team and you shouldn't give credit to anyone in that conference, I think is sorely mistaken. There's a lot of parallels here to UCF, Auburn, but way back in 2017, our model had that a darn tight game. And I think us and a lot of other people sort of took it for granted that maybe that wasn't very meaningful. And I think we were wrong to do so, because obviously that game ended up being extremely close. And, you know, at least on paper, these games are just as equally close.
One thing I will flip around, though, on the Alabama side, and this is where we got some more data, that this one might be a little more data heavy than matchup heavy, but we'll try to get into that as well. I don't think people understand, and Josh, I would love for you to put this into context if you could, and maybe get to typing away if you weren't expecting it. I don't think people truly understand how hard Alabama's schedule was this year. And what people will look at, and this is the failure for people to understand, like, maybe how advanced metrics or even normal metrics work in terms of strength of schedule ratings. And they say, well, who's the best team you played or who's the best team you beat? And then they just look at that and then that's it, right? So what people don't understand is, like, Ole Miss, 10-win team, Georgia, you know, 12-1 this year. But then they look at the rest and they don't see this elite schedule, because it's like, if you don't play like 7 10-win teams, you didn't play anybody. The grind that Alabama had, especially during when they lost to A&M, that little stretch was really tough. But in sum total, they had, I think, the toughest schedule in the country this year. And this is before they tack on these playoff games. So they're going to end with the toughest schedule in the country too. And so this is where I think the model is going to struggle a little bit, because we have this severe juxtaposition. In 2017, Auburn's schedule, I don't think it was as tough as Alabama's was this year. So we have this severe difference where, okay, Cincinnati didn't play a tough schedule. Doesn't mean they're not good, but then they didn't play a tough schedule, and then Alabama played the toughest schedule. So it's maybe that explains some of that margin from Vegas, is they're further apart than even normal P5 versus G5 is. But maybe you can put Alabama's schedule into context a little bit for even Alabama fans that might not know it.
Sure. And we talk a lot about how strength of schedules have a lot of different calculations. Sagarin's, for example, is the difficulty to go 500 in a year. And I'll repeat a refrain I've talked about a lot. You've got to be careful in what that means, because if I play, let's say, 6 junior high teams and I play 6 teams that are all NFL teams, as a college team, that's an incredibly easy schedule to make a bowl or to go 500, because I've got 6 really weak opponents. But it may be an exceptionally difficult or impossible season if you want to actually make a championship. So I've never been fond of Sagarin strength of schedule ratings when you're talking about playoff caliber teams, because the difficulty to make a bowl, not really relevant when you're trying to get one or less loss. What I think is a really good mark is the one FEI calculates, and we've been using Brian Fromeau and his metrics for a variety of reasons this year, and you can find him at bcftoys.com. His metrics really are based off 3 things. It's a metric that is based off how an average team would do against a schedule, how a good team would do against a schedule, and how an elite team would do against a schedule. So essentially sort of like a top 5 team, top 25 team, or just an average team nationally. Alabama in those metrics was first in difficulty for an average team, second for a good team, and third for an elite team. An average team with Alabama's schedule drops 8 games on average. They go 4, I guess, because you played 13 games, so that would be 5-8 with their schedule. An elite team drops over 2.5 games on average. So a normal top 5 team is typically going to drop, more often than not, 3 games with Alabama's schedule, and that's pretty impressive. But 1, 2, and 3 there, compare that to Cincinnati. 81st, 88th, and 96th. So the margin here is stratospheric. Since an elite team with Cincinnati's schedule, on average, will drop 0.8 of a game. So you got about a 30% chance, if you're a top 5 or top 10 team, of going undefeated with Cincinnati's schedule. And that's not, you know, the easiest thing in the world. But again, there's a chance that, you know, a lot of teams could run that. The bigger deal, though, is when you get to like a good team. So if you're a top 25 team, top 25 team with Alabama's schedule loses over 5 games. It's the second most difficult in the country. Only Auburn's was higher, and it was mere decimal points, even though they played Alabama. I should note the elite team, two most difficult ones, that would be Auburn and Arkansas, because they played Alabama and Georgia. Alabama was third. And again, most of these ratings actually kind of underweight conference strength. Believe it or not, they still do. There's so few data points, it's hard for them to fully compensate for differences in conferences. And I'll draw one more data point, and I'm clicking, going to say this without even knowing what it is offhand. Let's take 2017 and that Auburn-UCF matchup just to get a gauge of where it was. Auburn that year had probably the toughest schedule in the country. They were third for a good team. An average team, first for a good, first for an elite. UCF was 68th, 71st, and 73rd. Now, it's easy to say, well, you know, 73rd, 96th, it's not that big of a difference. But the thing I'll note, UCF was actually about a little over 1.1 game on average an elite team would lose with their schedule, about 6 games an average team would lose. So that's not insignificant, about 50% harder. And that's one of the problems we talk about strength of schedule rankings versus ratings. At the bottom end of that spectrum, when you go from like 70 to 90 to 100, it gets precipitously worse. And so I think that's the biggest difficulty with Cincinnati, is even that UCF-Auburn matchup, and you can be critical of them all you want or say, well, that was obviously a game where, you know, the group of five came in and showed out. UCF actually played a substantially more difficult schedule than Cincinnati actually did this year. And so I think that's the difficulty of the situation. It's really, to sum it all up, a bow, unprecedented that you have a number one team, number two team, somebody with the kind of rating Alabama has at the end of the year, playing a team with a strength of schedule that is in Cincinnati's alley this season. And I'll note, even that 2009 Cincinnati team that played a Florida juggernaut, that team was ended up with an elite strength of schedule ranking of 35th. It's pretty unprecedented what we're looking at this game.
So let's talk a little bit about matchups before we get into score predictions. I think it's interesting. Alabama's going to need to replace John Metchie. And if we saw what he did down the stretch for Alabama, it was a big deal. I will say that we saw how much more crippling losing Jameson Williams was in the Auburn game for Alabama than maybe Metchie, because he's not that. He is a great receiver. He's not the extreme vertical threat that you have to game plan for. Just in your mind, pretty quickly, tell me if you think this is right or not. I feel like if Alabama had to play Cincinnati the following week after Georgia, they would have probably been in bad shape because of Brian Robinson being, you know, hampered and not 100%, and having to replace Metchie in a pinch. But Brooks has already had a lot of experience there, caught the game tire against Auburn. They've got some talent there. Given the month to maybe get healthy and get some experience in practice, get some reps with the number one, at least on the offensive side of the ball, I don't think that any of these injuries are going to be as devastating as maybe they would have been a week after Georgia. What do you think for offensive side?
Totally agreed. I mean, Brooks is a 5-star receiver. They've got other 5-star receivers in that roster. Brooks has had a few games to play. I think Robinson's injury was low-key one of the bigger things this year, and it wasn't just the injury he suffered where he, you know, hurt his calf or whatnot. They had no running game against Auburn and somewhat lessened against Georgia. He was already hurt, if memory serves, and they don't have any backups. But Metchie, my thing with Metchie is that he is a really good role player for them, and he's really good, legitimately so, but Williams filled a unique role. He was a deep threat. He added a component to their offense. Not only did he end up being a phenomenal receiver, but he added a role to this to their scheme that nobody else could. They've got a lot of guys that can be solid, useful possession receivers, and maybe they're not as consistent or good as Mechie, but even then, quite frankly, I don't think Mechie was healthy either. So that week after the Georgia game, they were really banged up. I don't think they would have known what the rotation was going to be. Their running back situation was a mess. They're going to be a lot healthier at a lot of positions in sneaky ways. And I think this, you know, a full month, basically an entire camp, to find another receiver outside of Williams, they'll be in fine shape. And given the fact that I really, every time I watched him, I came away feeling like Mechie was injured. I honestly feel like they could end up with a guy that's more productive than Mechie. I know that may be blasphemy to Alabama fans, but I don't think Mechie was ever 100%. I think they just failed to find anyone that could step up in his spot.
Yeah, and I'm going to go deep on the historical depth chart for Alabama fans. If you think about what they're replacing in Mechie, it's a like Mike McCoy, Darius Hanks kind of guy when Mechie was not 100%. Because he's not a vertical threat. He's not a twitchy slot guy. He's one of those solid possession receivers who does, you know, does his job and does it well. But if he's hurt, he's not putting that extra threat on Alabama's opposition. The defensive side of the ball is a different side of the coin, Josh. Already announced that Josh Jobe is out for the year. He had a surgery. And Alabama fans are going to say that's no big loss because he struggled down the stretch. I would argue that he is a top five corner in the country first half of the season before he got hurt and was playing hurt. He was playing hurt, and you've got some anecdotes from the Arkansas game that you might want to highlight, but he'd been playing hurt for a while, which eroded the faith that Alabama fans had in him at his position, but it wasn't because, like, that's still a big loss. Now, it may not be a loss versus how he was playing the last couple of games, but in general, it's a pretty big loss. And if Jalen Armour-Davis on the other side of the ball can't go, because we haven't heard from Nick Saban if he's going to go or not, and I don't know that we've heard from practice reports whether he's going to go or not, you've got two starting corners out in this game. That is a different story, because that's not something you get healthy for if they're out for the season. Is that a bigger concern for you, or do you think Alabama is still talented enough and this offense for Cincinnati isn't that good enough to really exploit that deficiency?
I definitely think it's a big deal. Alec Pierce at Cincinnati is a big, and I mean big, big physical receiver. He's what, like 6'5", 6'6"? He's going to present a lot of matchup problems. And one of the big things you see with corners, especially young corners, is sometimes they struggle when they face guys with size. Now, you wanted me to bring up the anecdote. Josh Jobe against Arkansas got faced up a lot on Treylon Burks, and I have taken heat all year, and I'm going to stick to my guns, which you would probably say is a mistake. You're probably right. I think Treylon Burks is a very good receiver. I think he's a little bit overhyped, and the biggest problem I have is I don't think his long speed is very good. From everything I've watched, I haven't seen the explosion. He's a big physical guy, but I just haven't seen the explosion. But in that game, Jobe struggled with him. They gave up some deep plays. And the thing I noticed is, one, he had a hard time cutting. Like, Burks was being very physical with him, pushing off. Pierce would probably do the same thing. And when they would turn and run after the break, because Jobe would be put a little off balance, he didn't have the ability to recover. And it's one thing to say, well, that's just Burks being fast. But the thing I noticed was, often Alabama safeties were actually running past Jobe. And Jobe, when he was healthy, is a top-level corner. And so that's when it really dawned on me that, yeah, they've got a guy that's just not 100%. And every corner gets beat a little bit. But the problem with him, you know, like Tennessee game, I think he gave up a big play where he wasn't, like, looking at the snap or whatever. His recovery speed was significantly dampened. And that really exposes a corner. Now, that gets into a couple big concepts in this game. So I'll go ahead and touch on those. One concept is, Cincinnati, I think offensively, has been able to hide some things or maybe some potential weaknesses at times, because high level corner play is a rare thing. And when you get into the G5, one of the biggest differences is that a lot of times the corners you play are not nearly as good. They're not only are they more likely to bust coverage, but the ability to turn and run and the ability to have long speed is really diminished. And a lot of teams had to play, you know, someone of Cincinnati's caliber in real serious zone arrangements because they had no ability to play man. That's not something you would expect to translate against Alabama. Alabama has much better athletes. But the problem is now, like we're saying, Alabama's beat up. Now, on one side of the ball, or one side of the ball, meaning left and right, not offense, defense, they're going to be able to put up McKinstry, or Kool-Aid, played most of the year off and on. He started several games. He's a five-star, like, top corner in the country. He's, by all accounts, going to be a first-round pick, sort of like Sertan was as a freshman. That's not a guy you're going to be able to pick on. You know, he's had some trouble with taller guys. Maybe I think Pierce is probably going to sky a couple balls on Alabama, but I don't think you're going to win consistently. The problem, and we talk about this a lot, when you have a position like corner, if you lose your number one guy, you replace him with your number three. Alabama has a slot player, or really two guys they rotate at slot that are definitively slots. And at the other corner position, the backup, Marcus Banks, entered the transfer portal. So now you've got a guy, I think they're saying Kyrie Jackson would be the backup, that I don't recall ever having really ever seen play corner for them. And so I have really no idea what to expect. And now if Armour Davis plays, he's a high-level corner. And I think in general, the corner play for both teams is extremely good. I mean, Cincinnati's corners are true NFL corners. That is, in my opinion, by far the strength of their defense. Alabama has the corners to match that if they're healthy. But if they're not, all of a sudden what has been the past couple of years a point of major strength for Alabama, even when the defense wasn't great, like dating all the way back to 2019, you get guys like Trevon Diggs, they might have a serious weakness at one corner spot. And so the question is, you know, is that something that will materialize? And if it does materialize, is it something Cincinnati can take advantage of?
And I think that for me, I'm going to say it right now, like, if Jalen Armour Davis can't play in the postseason, I don't think Alabama can win the national championship. I think it's that bad. Now, I don't know that they lose to Cincinnati. I think they could still beat Cincinnati, but I'm not confident that they can go two in a row. One of the things that you and I were talking about before we hit record here was everybody talks about the corners from Cincinnati. Everybody talks about the defense for Cincinnati. Schematically, they run generally a 3-3-5 that Alabama has proven they've been able to run on really well. And the nature of it has, at least when Alabama has played a 3-3-5 the last couple of years, they've been able to pick it apart as well. And I think that there'll be some wrinkles for sure. But one of the things you mentioned and I agree with is Cincinnati is maybe oversold a little bit in terms of their defensive prowess and maybe undersold offensively. So before we get into picks, maybe touch on that for a couple of minutes and then we'll roll into score predictions.
Yeah. And I'll just start with some advanced metrics. And in terms of FEI rating, Cincinnati is 22nd on offense and 10th on defense. And I think there's sort of this expectation that Cincinnati isn't a top end elite defense. Cincinnati's offense is very slow, grindy, not particularly good or explosive. I don't think that's really fair. I mean, in terms of FEI, 22, they're right ahead of Arkansas, who's 23rd. And the defensively at 10th, you know, they're between Notre Dame, 9th, and Michigan, 11th. I mean, both good defenses, but I think people view them as more like a top 5 defense and maybe a 30 to 40 range offense. And they're a notch worse defensively, and that's not to say they're bad. Like, and I'm sure a lot of Cincinnati fans are throwing their arms up, but I'm more just saying they're not necessarily going to shock Alabama. And Texas A&M 7th. This defense is probably not as good as Texas A&M, and I think that's probably legitimately true. They don't have the front 7 in particular that is as physical as A&M. I think the corner situation is better at Cincinnati, and so that may be a better set of matchups. But the bigger deal to me is offensively, they are quite good. So when you balance it out, I agree with you. I think there's the potential for Alabama to run the ball well. I mean, that's how they really how they beat Ole Miss in that game. They didn't throw the ball over Ole Miss. They ran it down their throats, leaned on Brian Robinson something awful. They kind of need to be able to do that again. But on the offensive side of the ball, Cincinnati really does a lot of things with Ritter and his athleticism. They put teams in conflict a ton. There's a lot of zone read concepts. There's a lot of power out of those formations, but it is definitely a lot of zone read. And what they tend to do is really strain you and then pop big plays. Jerome Ford is a guy Alabama fans are very familiar with because he played at Alabama. He's not a big physical back, and Cincinnati fans like to brisk at that. Look, man, you're in a different world now. A guy that can run through an arm tackle is sort of the standard for playoff level. We talk physical, we mean NFL physical. Jerome Ford is physical enough to play the position, but he's not going to truck a high-level linebacker on a consistent basis. He does rely more on his speed. And when they start straining teams to deal with Ritter's threat to run, to deal with Ford's speed, then their passing game, which I think is sneaky good, really starts hitting kind of more than anything just deep shots. They have a lot of highlight reel plays where guys are well behind the defense, and Ritter has the arm to hit those guys. And they also have a lot of RPO, like RPO slant shots, those sorts of things, which are really dependent on the linebackers walking up. And their goal, more than anything, is really to strain you with the number of weapons they have and the speed they have and hit you over the top. But the other thing we talked about, and I'm going to pass it back on you and make you be maybe the negative person for once, Ritter, I think, is a little inconsistent. And my view, and I think your view as well, is that when you watch the highlights of Ritter, he looks really awesome because he hits all these big-time shots. But when you narrow down a little bit more and you watch him in tighter games or you watch him play to play, I think a lot of times the plays you don't see in a highlight tell the story of a quarterback more than the ones you do see. And I do think Ritter does leave a lot of plays on the field due to his inconsistencies as a passer.
I've not been a huge fan of Ritter. I think he's good, not great. There's a lot of people last year that were saying he's a first-round draft pick. I don't think he is unless it's a really weak quarterback class. That's not to say he's bad, but he reminds me a lot of Penix Jr. at Indiana when he's healthy, when he was on, the good version of him, in that in any given play, he can hit you for a 70-yard touchdown, in any given play. And in any given drive, he can keep a drive alive and annoy a defense by dropping back, everybody's covered, get you 6 yards on third and five, and keep the ball moving down the field. These are two very good traits of him, of his. My concern with him facing an Alabama who can exploit three and outs on the other side of the ball is that he does lend himself to chunk play, maybe score, and then back-to-back drives a three and out. Something like that. That's what this offense kind of lends itself to. And I think we're going to see that again. And this is a great segue into me giving my score. I think we're going to see both of these teams come out successful early in scripted drives. And I think the difference in this game and why Alabama wins this game is that where the offense is going to bog down because the chunk plays don't happen, or they throw it vertically down the field on third and seven, trying to get a 25, 30-yard pass play, and it doesn't land because it's low percentage. I think Alabama's going to turn some of those stalled drives into enough separation that somewhere around second quarter, early third quarter, somewhere around there, Alabama's going to kind of separate themselves enough that whatever happens the rest of the game won't be enough for Cincinnati. But I think it's closer than people maybe are thinking. I've got Alabama 33, Cincinnati 24. And look, even if Alabama covers this game, like a lot of people are looking for Alabama to just murder Cincinnati, and I don't see it happening. But let's look at what you and I have said for ages, is that there's not, in any given year, there's not four elite teams. There's just not. So in the current system that we have set up now, we've had a Notre Dame team come in who's clearly not been on the level of the teams they're playing in the playoffs. We've had Oklahoma in the past, clearly not on the level, and their regular season showed it. So from that standpoint, I don't want to hear it from the media or fans who are hating on the G5 getting a chance here. I don't want to hear it if Alabama does dominate them, because what I'm going to say is, okay, but if Oklahoma goes 11-1, 12-1 next year, you're going to let them in the playoffs, even though they got embarrassed. If Notre Dame, like, we wanted Notre Dame again in the playoffs this year. Come on. You know, so Alabama's handled Notre Dame a couple of times now. Clemson handled Notre Dame, and nobody's saying they can't ever be in the playoffs because it's an indictment on them, when maybe it should be. So that's my rant, in that I've got it's maybe a closer game than people are thinking. But even if Alabama covers, I don't want to hear it from Bama fans or anybody else that Cincinnati didn't belong this year. End rant. Give me your score.
My score is 34-24 Alabama, and I'm in the same boat. I think Cincinnati's a really good team. I think Cincinnati's never going to feel like a serious threat to win, but I think they're never going to be out of it. And look, I think the 14-point spread, and it's 13.5, 14.5, it's been floating around, I think it's a good line, and I think Cincinnati's a really good team. We're known as a chalk-heavy channel, and there's good reason for that. If you follow the sport well, you know college football is a chalk-heavy sport. If you are picking straight up in your football pick'em, you should have, out of 20 games, maybe 4 upsets a week if you're picking well. And point spreads tend to be pretty high, like they are here. But the truth is, Cincinnati is a very good team. We were vocal throughout the end of the season. I repeatedly had them in my playoff picture at the end of the year as a channel that's known to quote-unquote hate G5s. Because Cincinnati is a team that deserves to be there, like you said. And I also agree with you. You know, frankly, it won't shock me this bowl season. And we'll do some other previews. And I encourage you guys to check them out if you're into college football, because I think they're interesting. Or, I mean, if we didn't think they were interesting, we wouldn't do them. I honestly think the Big 12 this year is probably going to reflect as or more poorly than maybe the AAC will. And I think if you had put Oklahoma or Baylor or Oklahoma State in this playoff, I probably would have picked Alabama to beat them worse than Cincinnati, because I think Cincinnati is a better team. Now, this is an even game in our model. We talked about how in that UCF-Auburn game, and I tried to dodge it up, but I just couldn't find our model to save my life, that our model had that one to be even as well. But the reality is, I do think there is a bit of a difference when you're playing a team like Alabama. Auburn in 2017, you want to, that every game is a unique thing. And you can look at that, or you can look at Florida, Cincinnati in 2009. Different circumstances, different teams on either side of the ball. This Alabama team is not the juggernaut Florida was relative to competition in 2009. Auburn was not nearly as good at the end of the year as Alabama is right now. So, I think when you balance it out, I think it's fair to say that this is, you know, a tight matchup. And hey, look, I found my model. I just had a eureka moment. Yeah, the computer model had UCF 43, Auburn 27. And that's, we said even, but yeah, it had UCF by 16. I remembered where I'd have the file as we're recording this. But that kind of goes to show, right, how much of an advantage you really need to show versus that level of competition to be even. And with the teams being even, given the relative level of competition, you know, Cincinnati needed to perform a little bit better than Alabama throughout the year for me to feel confident. You know, when I say better, I mean better against equal level competition, for them to feel confident they can have this step up and then maintain that same level. So, yeah, I have it by 10. I think this is a game where Alabama is going to be up by more than 10 until late. I think Cincinnati just doesn't go away. Alabama doesn't get the great breather that a lot of Alabama fans think they'll probably get in round one. And you end up with a close game. But let me turn this around, because you ask this to me all the time. If one team runs away with it, it's got to be Alabama, right? Like, I don't see any path for Cincinnati just dominating Alabama in this game. Do you?
Yeah, and most of that, honestly, is just history. Alabama's had one blowout loss under Nick Saban since 2007. Or since 2006. Actually, I think you have to go back before, like multiple years before Saban, to have an Alabama loss by more than 14 points. And I just don't think Alabama's built to get dominated in that way. I think that if somebody runs away with it, it's Alabama kind of exposing the unknown from Cincinnati. I don't think it'll happen, because I also think that Alabama is going to play probably a little conservative out of the gate. They're going to play feel out Cincinnati a little bit to see where they can poke holes in this team, which, you know, maybe they don't, because maybe the one advantage Alabama would have is if you force Cincinnati to play from behind. I don't think they're really equipped to do that. But yeah, I think that it obviously is Alabama. I think if Cincinnati wins this game, it's going to be because the corner deficiency for Alabama really shows up in a significant way. You know, I will say in 2018, when the corner situation was really tough for Alabama because of injury, they also had a lot of front seven injury and displacement, which left them with no pass rush and really not great against the run. So they were putting those corners on an island and already exposed because they weren't helping them out up front either. And they don't have that this year. I'm glad you find that model, because it does kind of support what we're saying in terms of like the disparity and the gap, in terms of not being able to model it. All right, y'all, that's it for us on this one. We ran super long, but I think it was worth it. This was a really fun conversation, and I'm pretty excited about it. If you made it this far and you want to help us out, other than like, comment, subscribe, share this video wherever you talk college football. If it's Reddit CFB, if it's a Cincinnati message board, if it's on Facebook or Twitter, that's the way to help us out a ton. We have people ask us all the time, can we subscribe to your channel? Do you have a Patreon? We don't have any of that. We're here for y'all. This is not our day job, but we really do it to expose more and more fans to college football, the nerdy side of college football. And we hope you'll help us in that endeavor by sharing this wherever you talk about sports. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great bowl season, and God bless.